Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, where...
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. This is Fanny Crawford, your co-host.
And Stacy Okowski, your other co-host.
And we're happy you joined us this afternoon. It is 12 noon, or will soon be 12 noon, on enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. We're a community-based internet radio station, and we're going to be telling stories for the next hour. And our theme today, such as it is, we're going to be working from a play that Stash and I will deliver on Monday, the 26th. Today is Monday, the 19th of November. And after Thanksgiving, we're going to be at Stories in the Round in Hagerstown performing The Guys. So, Stash, you want to say a bit about The Guys?
It's a challenging play, and it's a serious play.
You're only saying it's challenging because we're now down to the wire.
Yes.
Learning our lines. Yes.
Our feet are to the fire, and I can smell the soles of my shoes burning.
It's a wonderful play.
It is, and it's serious. It is a serious play with some light moments, but it has a wonderful message about people who serve, like firemen, policemen, first responders. And it's the story of a fire captain who has to do eulogies for 8 men that were lost from his company on 9/11. And he's not very good at public speaking and writing. He meets a war correspondent who is a teacher and writer, who helps him resolve his conundrum with the eulogies through dialogue. And it's a wonderful experience.
I'm enjoying it. And I hope our audience does
as
well.
I'm sure they will.
So that'll be at Stories in the Round on Monday the 26th, November 26th at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, 13245 Searfoss Pike, which is just a mile west of Hagerstown. It's Salem Avenue extended, becomes Searfoss Pike. And if you want more information about the play or about what's coming up in December, call me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638, or you can reach me at email, Fanitsky, Fanitsky, at hotmail.com.
So, here we go.
All right, we're going to actually, well, we're starting this performance of the play today on the radio in the middle, or towards the beginning, but not the opening. Is that correct?
Well, if I were saying what is correct, I'm not sure how I would have put that. But
well,
yes, we're going to skip a few paragraphs of the very beginning.
Okay, so but, it is. It's not the middle.
We're going to begin on page 6.
Oh, change of plan.
Just only by 2 paragraphs.
Okay. So this is Joan, the journalist, talking. The phone rang. My sister answered. It was her friend, the masseuse. Park Slope, you have friends who are masseuses. You meet them at the bookstore coffee shop during poetry readings. This friend was giving emergency massages to rescue workers. Look, she said, I've been working on this guy. Bad shape. He's a fire captain, and he just lost most of his men. He's got to give the eulogies. The first one's on Thursday. He can't write them. He needs a writer. Well, I said, when was the last time I heard someone say they needed a writer? In fact, that was just when we were all discovering our crisis of marginality. Everyone wanted to help, but we couldn't. They didn't want amateurs wandering around the site. They didn't want our blood. Even surgeons felt useless. A friend of mine went to volunteer. Plumbers and carpenters first, they said. Intellectuals, back of the line. The firefighter needs a writer. I called him. He lived down the block. Come now, I said. I have a few hours. My sister took the baby out for the day. I knew exactly what to expect. Fire captain, solid guy, works out. Hi.
Joan?
Yeah, hi. Come in. I'm really sorry about what happened.
Yeah. Look, I feel really bad about this. It's a beautiful afternoon. It's the weekend. You should be with your kids. You don't need to be doing this.
Oh, my kids have play dates. I'm useless. It's fine. Hey, have a seat right there at the table. And hey, you want some coffee?
Yeah, sure, if you got some going.
Milk, sugar?
Just black.
Okay.
See, I just don't know what to do. These guys, the call came and they went off. And they haven't found them yet, but some of the families, they want to have service now so they can try to move on. I got to get up and talk in church. I've been sitting down in front of a piece of paper all day and haven't been able to write one sentence, not a thing. I keep going into a clutch. I mean, I'm no writer under normal circumstances, but now, what can I tell the families? What am I going to say?
Hey, it's okay. Maybe I can help. I've never written a eulogy before, but I've written some speeches. It's okay. Now, how many did you say there were?
Eight. Eight men. I lost eight men.
So, eight eulogies. Well, we'll just take it a step at a time and do what we can. Now, you say that one of the services is next week.
Yeah, Thursday.
So we'll do that one first.
You see, the department has almost 350 men unaccounted for. It's been 12 days, but they haven't found any bodies. Some of the families are still waiting. They say they're going to find them alive in some air pocket or something. But the other families, they say, no, they're gone. They want to go ahead and have the service, but they don't have bodies.
Right.
Some of the families are putting up a picture where the coffin is supposed to go, and we'll just do the eulogies up there with the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, we're talking about 350 men. You got to understand, over a bad year, we might lose maybe six. This was in one day, 1 hour. So, that means 350 services. But if they keep digging and find some bodies, the families might want funerals to bury them. And if every guy had a service and a funeral, that would be 700. We'll be doing this for a year. I hope they don't all want funerals, too.
Wow. So, which services are scheduled so far?
I've got the list here. Bill Doherty, he's first. That's Thursday. Then Jimmy Hughes, he's the next week. After that, there's Patrick O'Neill. That's a real hard one. My best friend. What a fine man. His wife wants to do his on his birthday. And the next day is Barney Keppel. Barney. Boy, everybody loved Barney. The guys are going to take that one hard.
Okay, so Doherty, Hughes, O'Neill Keppel. So that's four we need to do today. Well, we'll just try it a step at a time. Thursday,
yeah. Bill Doherty.
Did you talk to the priest? It's a Catholic service, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how long the eulogy is supposed to be?
Not too long. 4 minutes, five max. No, not even that long. There'll be other people talking too, but the families want me to say something. I'm the captain. What can I say to them? How can I explain it?
Oh, hey, it's okay. I mean, human beings have been giving eulogies for thousands of years. You're doing this for the families. You'll comfort them. It's for them. It won't be about what happened that day. We'll talk about who they were, make it about them. That's what you can give the families.
I keep hearing all these speeches from the politicians on TV and the pictures in the papers. Hero this, hero that. I don't even recognize them.
So that's why it's good that you're doing this. You can give their families and friends something they can recognize. You can do that. So hey, tell me about Bill.
Bill, yeah. Well, see, that's a problem. There's just not much to say. This hero stuff, like there were some guys in a movie. But Bill, he wasn't like that. He was just an ordinary guy, a schmo. If Bill walked into a room, nobody would even notice. You can't say that in a eulogy.
It's okay. Don't worry. We'll do this. I mean, people who are ordinary in an extraordinary situation, that's what this is about. Now, just back up a little bit. Tell me about him. What did he look like? When you think of him, what comes to your mind?
What did he look like? He looked like a plumber. Not a big guy. Reddish hair, mid-40s. But he was a senior man. All the junior men relied on him. They had their eyes on him to know what to do. My men, he called them.
Okay. And when you close your eyes, where do you see him? What's he doing?
Yeah. In the kitchen.
The kitchen?
The guys spend a lot of time in the kitchen between runs. There's a lot of downtime. Bill's there saying, I'm looking out for my men. My men need this. Yeah, Bill spent a lot of time talking in the kitchen. He was real good with the younger guys. He was always taking them and pointing things out to them.
Okay. Yeah?
See, someone like Bill, he's real senior. He's been there 16 years. There's always new guys coming through, and sometimes they can be a real pain in the ass for the older guys. They're a little nervous, and they don't know where the things are. A guy like Bill could have blown them off, but he was always looking out for them. Here's the gear. Here's the tools. Here's how you handle it. No, not like that. Like this.
Was he a family man? Religious?
Oh, Bill was quiet. He never talked about himself. Half the company didn't even know he was married. I know he went to Mass, but he never made a show. Never made a show of it. But he was proud of being Irish. You know, I think that's why he was a fireman. It's thick in the Irish blood. He loved New York, all its nooks and crannies. You know, these guys see the city from outside and inside, underground and all the hidden places. Bill wanted to know the history of everything. I remember him telling me, Nick, I just got this great book, A Walking Tour of Flatbush Avenue.
Flatbush Avenue?
Yeah, you want to have a guy like that around, especially downtown with all these crazy streets. Nowadays, you get a computerized map when you get a call.
Right.
But somebody can still call in and give you bad directions or a building name with no address or no entrance on that side of the street.
No, I never thought of that.
On that day, I still don't know what happened. I can't find anyone who saw the company. They got off the apparatus, and the officer told the driver, we're going to Tower 1. They're running down West Street in full gear about the same time the second plane hit. And maybe they peeled off and went to Tower 2. But we don't know where to look for them.
What else did Bill love? Any sports, music? You said he hung out in the kitchen. Did he like to cook?
Bill wasn't exactly a cook. The guys take turns making meals for everybody. Sometimes it's okay, but it can be pretty bad. I call their cooking valiant attempts and dismal failures.
Yeah.
Every guy has his specialty, and they usually cook it every time it's their turn. We're talking undercooked chicken and nasty rice-a-roni. Bill would sit there and try it and come up with some real zingers.
So he was more of a food critic.
Yeah, yeah, he was the firehouse food critic. And he could zap them, but good. But not mean. He was never mean.
Okay, okay, this is real good. This works. 'Cause you know, Nick, you want to give people someone that they recognize, not just a plaster saint. This is fine. Now, wait a minute.
I'm really sorry about... I'm not giving you anything to work with here. I shouldn't be doing this to you.
No, just wait a minute. Okay, now, try this. It starts here, and it jumps down to here, and read it out loud. Would you? So I can hear it, too.
I'm Nick Flanagan, captain of Ladder Company 60. I've worked with Bill Daugherty for a long time. I want to give my condolences to all of Bill's family here with us today. We've been hearing a lot about heroes, and Bill was one of them. He gave his life for others, and that is a noble thing. But Bill was a quiet hero, never one to show off, never blustered. He was a firefighter for 16 years, and he was a good one. He had the most important quality for a firefighter. He was absolutely dependable. Yeah, that's right, dependable. Over time, we realized how important he was for the newer guys at the firehouse. Sometimes it can be hard for the experienced men to show the young ones the drills year after year. But Bill was always looking out for the new guys, showing them the ropes. And he did it in that quiet way of his. He never made them feel small. My men, he called them. My men. Yeah, you got it. That's him.
They're your words. I just put them in order.
No, you got the craft. You know how to put it. He was like an older brother to them, looking out for them. They appreciated it, and I appreciated it. You got to have guys like Bill to build a strong team. They may not say much, but they hold things together. If Bill hadn't been a fireman, he could have been a food critic. Bill used to spend a lot of time in the kitchen talking to the guys and evaluating the cuisine. When Bill tried out a questionable dish, he could come up with some real zingers. The restaurants of New York are lucky he went into another line of work. Yeah, the guys will like that. What did Bill love? He loved his family. And he loved this city. On September 11th, he was a senior man. The younger men could look to someone who was steady and professional to show the way. We know that Bill and the other firefighters of New York saved thousands of lives that day. That means that there are thousands of people and their family members who are able to go on because of them. We can only thank them and ask for God's kindest blessing on those they have left behind.
So, it works?
You got it. I can do this. I'll have this in front of me when I get up there. Something to give them. Hey, are you okay? You're listening to EnlightenRadio.org, Storytelling Hour. And I am Stasi Olkowski.
And I'm Fanny Crawford, your other co-host.
And we are performing a play, part of a play today, called The Guys. And we'll be back to it in just a minute. But first, I think we should mention that Speak Story Series has one more performer coming up, and that's at Shepherd University in Reynolds Hall on December 11th at 7:30. Elizabeth Ellis is coming back to town.
Woohoo!
She was here in March, and unfortunately, the only snow I remember this past year happened on 2 days while she was here and canceled her workshop and her performance. And she has graciously said she's coming back on December 11th.
Her workshop's on the 10th, is that right?
Yes, workshop's on the 10th. And you can get information about the workshop and details about the cost at speakstoryseries.com.
Correct.
There you go.
Okay, so do we have any other little announcements we want to make before, or we'll do that later?
We'll do that later. We mentioned that next Monday already earlier.
Mm-hmm. So for Stories in the Round.
Stories in the Round.
What we're doing right now. Right. We're performing this two-person play
right.
that we'll be doing on Monday, right. next Monday, the 26th.
Okay. So are you okay?
Are you okay? That was what we all kept asking each other the rest of September. What was the answer? The pebbles dropped in the water. The point of entry is you, yourself. Were you present at ground zero and wounded, suffocated, or covered in white ash? No, I guess you're okay. The first ring around the pebble. Is your family okay? Did you lose someone in the towers or on the plains? The next ripple. Friends. Are your people okay? Next ripple. If someone died in the tower that you had dinner with once and thought was a really nice person, are you okay? Next. If you look at a flyer of a missing person in the subway and you start to lose it, are you okay? If all the flyers are gone one day, they're gone, are you okay? Is anyone okay? That first week, I bought a coffee at Starbucks on the way to work, and the guy at the counter handed me my cup and said, "Here's your change. God bless America." I took a breath and said, "Are your people okay?" And he said, "Only two missing. Only two." And I said, "I hope you can find comfort." Only people from Oklahoma talk to servers in coffee shops. But at least there you can say, "God bless." Here, you don't know if they have a God, or if you have a God, or if anyone has a God. It's the same God that wants the same things. We all travel in our track. Neighborhood, jobs, friends, parents of your children's friends. No matter how big a city gets, the only way to live in it is to live in your village. You get to a certain age, the next person you meet has a logical connection to the ones that came before. Friend of a friend, Nick and I weren't supposed to meet. You couldn't create another sequence for his life that leads to me, or for my life that leads to him. After September 11th, all over the city, people were jumping tracks.
Jimmy. What can I say about Jimmy? He was the new guy, still on probation. I hardly knew the guy. I never even got to meet his family. His girlfriend came down to the firehouse last week. Nice girl. Said he was a bicycle racer. The bike club out in Flushing had a memorial for him. Put flowers on the handlebars and everything.
Oh.
But that's all I know about him.
How long was he there?
Oh, he was only with the ladder company for a couple of weeks. He had been with the engine company for 7 weeks before that. That's what they do with the probies. 7 weeks engine, 7 weeks ladder. But when they flip them to ladder, they come into my office the first day. We shake hands, and then we might not see each other that much for a while.
Ladder?
The ladder company. See, there are two companies side by side. The mission of the engine is to put water on the fire. They got the hoses. They work like a team to get it where it has to go. Ladder, we do ventilation, entry, and search.
So your engine has the ladder thing?
No. You call the engine an engine and the ladder a truck. the engine is has a vehicle, and of course the ladder has a vehicle. They're two parts of the same company. We have all kinds of ladders. Suitcase ladder, beautiful. Folds up so you can carry it like a suitcase. Axes, electronic sensors. We have the forcible entry team that breaks down the doors so the guys with the hoses can get in. The engine and truck. We work out of the same firehouse, and sometimes we hang out together. But we don't know all each other's guys the same way.
Okay, I see. So Jimmy just got there. What was it like for him?
Well, he had to learn fast. He was willing to learn. It was always, show me more. I think he had a lot of friends that were firemen.
How old was he?
I got it here. Let's see. Yeah, he was 26.
Oh. What kinds of things did he like? What did he look like?
I don't know. I just don't know. He wasn't there that long, and with everything that's happened, this is terrible. This is a terrible thing, but I have to tell you, right now, I can't even remember his face.
Hey. We'll do this. We will figure it out. Now, okay, you say they come into your office on the first day.
Yeah, they all do. They come in and I shake their hand and I say, welcome to the company. This is the best job in the world. 2 weeks before this happened, I shook his hand, but I didn't tell him he'd be dead.
You didn't know. So how was he doing at the job?
Well, I'm not real sure. He was still learning.
Well, I mean, if he was screwing up, you would have heard about it, right?
Oh, yeah. I always hear about it if they screw up. I didn't hear anything like that.
So he wasn't screwing up. So he was doing fine. And he went through probation, and every guy goes through probation. So we can put that in too, right?
Yeah.
So how does that work?
Well, first they got to take the tests. And then there's this brutalizing physical and paperwork. Lots of paperwork, piles of paperwork. And then they go home and wait, long, long wait. And they think it'll never end. Most of the guys get rejected. But if you're lucky, you get the call. This is fireman so-and-so. Come on down. You're in.
Yeah. And then what?
And then you start. You sit down, keep your eyes open, and shut up.
Right. What are the senior guys like with the new ones?
Well, you know, they show them around. Some are more patient than others. They give them a little bit of a hard time. Not exactly hazing. It all goes with the territory. Jimmy was doing fine. He was a regular, low-key guy, well-liked. He came in the same time with another probie, Hipólito Díaz. I love that name. You got to love that name. Where did they get these names? Sounds like a ballpark. Put him in the outfield. Now batting for Mariano Rivera, Hipólito Díaz. Hippo's missing too. He's missing with the guys from the engine.
So they started in the summer, right? Was it a long, hot summer? What was it like in the firehouse in the weeks leading up to it?
Oh, and nothing special. Some little stuff, false alarms, waste basket fires. The guys were a little restless. This was the day. They were chomping at the bit. This was the day they were waiting for.
So Jimmy hadn't really been in many fires before.
No, this was it. September 11th. This was his first real fire.
Of course, everyone has their own description. Myself, I favor the idea that it's like a massive boot stomping right here, chest, diaphragm. Knocks the wind out. Heartbreak sounds too delicate, too pretty for this sensation. It's a body blow. And then you just can't breathe. Not really. Not for a long time. Brain Chemistry for Dummies, Lesson 1, The Science of Pain. Cortisol is released in response to stress. Cortisol is sometimes called a stress hormone. A variety of psychological stressors can cause cell death in the nerves affected by the cortisol system. Whew, cell death, don't like that. Trauma is translated into anatomical changes in the brain. Stress can cause changes in the neural architecture, the hardwiring of the brain. Diminished blood flow to the brain causes comparable brain cell death, and so does normal aging. Oh, well, that explains a lot. Put simply, we've got nerve fibers running through our brains like lines strung across telephone poles. Our brain sends out chemical messages that leap from pole to pole. And when we experience devastation, trauma, toxins spill out. And God, can you imagine what it looks like in there? When monkeys are subjected to severe forms of stress, they show signs like passivity, cries of distress, and self-directed behaviors like huddling and rocking. The animal model seems to say that pain has its price. The victim carries his scars. Here, Nick. Try this.
I'm Nick Flanagan of Ladder Company 60. Yeah. Honor the memory. Condolences. Okay. Here. Jimmy's job was to learn as much as possible as fast as possible. We could tell he was going to be good. He was quiet, helpful, and hardworking. The guys liked him, and they're good judges of character. Yeah, this is working. On that morning in September, Jimmy was going out on his first big fire. He was serving with the cream of the crop, and he was holding his own. They were ready for this day. It was the work they had chosen, work that was about risking everything, risking your life in order to save others. In our grief, let us remember that. When Jimmy first came to the firehouse, he came into my office, and I shook his hand, telling him what I tell all the new men. This is the best job in the world. Now I would say this is the most important job in the world.
I'm sorry, but maybe that last part's not right.
The best job in the world. Can I say that in front of his folks? But it's true. I've been doing this for more than 20 years. I can't imagine doing anything else.
I believe you.
These guys... You just wouldn't believe these guys.
More coffee?
Why not?
Here you go. It's a little cold.
You should try the coffee at the firehouse. It's really bad.
Oh, I drink a lot of bad coffee.
No, I mean really bad. Disgusting.
Well, I usually don't drink it this late in the day anyway.
It is getting late. Hey, I should be getting out of here. It's your weekend. You got plenty of other things you need to do.
Nick, when we were talking on the phone, I thought about what I was going to do this afternoon. Nothing more important than this. But next week, once I'm back in the office with the kids and everything, then it might be hard to get back. Let's see what we can do today.
Patrick. We got to do Patrick. The thing is, I think I'm, what do they call it? In denial about Patrick. I swear. I'm sitting in the office and the door opens and I think he's going to walk in.
Patrick O'Neill.
Oh, Patrick. This man had a full life. This man always had something going on. His work, his family, his church. I say to him one time, what are you going to do this weekend? And he says, going to the church picnic. I didn't know they still had church picnics.
Kids?
Four. Christy, she just got married. I think she's 25. The twins, they're 14, and Teresa's 10. His wife, Mary Rose, he's got a birthday coming up. He's going to be 47 next month.
How long was he with the company?
Patrick came into the company as a brand new lieutenant 4 years ago. I got to see this man grow. When you're new, you're shaky about everything, but over time, I saw him grow. He had conviction. That was the thing about Patrick. He knew this was the job for him. He was sure he could do it. That's what makes a leader. The troops eat it up.
So the men looked up to him.
Oh, yeah. So they wanted to follow. That's the difference between being a boss and a leader. Patrick was 6 weeks away from taking his captain's test. No doubt about it, he had it.
Nick, are the men ever afraid?
Afraid. People are afraid, but they never admit it.
You can't admit it. Everything would fall apart, and you can't afford that.
They need someone to follow. Good decisions. Calm under fire. I don't like the cowboy hotshot type. Never did. But Pat wasn't like that. When I think of him, I think of when I was in the Army infantry. They had this motto, follow me. That's what he was like, confident. Follow me. And they did. That morning, too.
What picture do you have of him? When you think about him, what do you see him doing?
Oh, I see him walking with these giant strides. You're not going to stop this train. He could cover a room in a few steps. Yeah, I see him leading five guys up to a building, sizing it up. First thing he does when he gets to a fire, walk around, size it up. And these five guys behind him running to keep up. And all the time they're listening to him, thinking, what does he want? How do we do this job right?
How does he motivate them? Criticism or praise?
Oh, there's lots of praise back in the kitchen. But he kept an eye on them too, especially the new guys, the probies. This one's good, he'd say, if you like them. But don't try to pull anything over on him. If you got a square rooter, Pat picked up on that right away. He knew.
A square rooter?
That's what we call them. A guy that's just out for himself. You know, an operator.
So Patrick was a real straight arrow.
Oh, yeah. Work, church, and home. That was the motto. He was a real role model for the men. Last year, when Barney Keppel had his little brush with the law, Patrick helped him out. Barney goes to him and says, okay, Lieutenant, from now on, I'm a new man. Work, church, and home, just like you.
He must have liked that.
Oh, yeah. He didn't believe it. Not for a minute. Barney was work, church, and home at least until Friday, maybe Thursday. But that was okay. Barney didn't mean any harm. He just got into scrapes. Him and Dave. Barney and Dave.
So Patrick talked a lot about his kids.
Oh, yeah. It was always, I got Frankie's soccer practice this weekend. Going to meet Christie's in-laws on Sunday. Tonight we're going to Teresa's recital. This man had a full life. One day, he says, I made Waldorf salad for the church picnic. You got to try it sometime. He goes to the church picnic. I tell you, I didn't know they had church picnics anymore.
Well, I can't say that I've been to any lately.
Nobody's having any fun anymore.
We're all walking under this cloud. Oh, but there was something last night, a tango wedding party. No, really, I went to a tango wedding party, only in New York. He's Japanese, she's a blonde from California, and they met at their tango club in Central Park. The party was in this restaurant down on 38th Street. The whole place was done up all white and silver with candlelight. They had a little tango trio, real Argentines, and they played. And after the dinner, people danced. 10 couples, the bride and groom, they were really good.
Tango, that's a difficult dance.
And the women were all dressed up with their hair up, wearing little high-heeled shoes with pointy toes. You don't see that anymore. And when they got going on the dance floor, their feet just flashed. It was so beautiful. It was like a dream intermission in the middle of all this. But there was drama, too. On the 11th, the groom was flying in from the West Coast and the bride was working downtown. There were hours and hours when each one thought the other one was dead. But they weren't. So they had this incredible evening. So beautiful. They were beautiful. They made us all beautiful for a few hours.
I dance, you know? That's my big thing.
You dance? Really?
Yeah, I've been taking lessons for years. I don't do the competitions. I just like learning new stuff and perfecting my steps. And the people. The people are great.
What kind of dancing?
Lots of kinds. Swing, ballroom. But tango is the top dance. That's really at the top. Very difficult dance. You can study tango for a long time. You like to dance?
Oh, I love to, but my husband doesn't, so I don't get the chance. But watching them made me want to. Their teachers were there. I never saw dancing like that before.
Usually you don't get to dance with your teacher socially. But once, we were at this party and my teacher said, "Yeah, come on, let's do it." What an experience. You looked at her and it was all there, the frame. She was perfect. You can't make a mistake when you're dancing with perfection.
The frame?
The frame. It's the invisible box you're standing in and how you hold yourself inside it. Like if you push your partner's hand. Here, give me your hand. If you push your partner's hand and it's like cooked spaghetti, that's no good. Here, put your hand up again. You got to have some resistance. You got to feel the whole body move in the same direction. Like this. Otherwise, it's no good.
Yeah, I see.
And if you're lucky, it all comes together. When people move in sync, sometimes it's real hard for these modern women, you know?
Oh.
Well, they're professionals. They're educated. They're used to being in charge. But when you're dancing, you got to be able to follow. You got to be able to feel the lead.
You've got to let go.
Yeah, it's not so hard. You just follow. You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, coming to you from Bolivar, West Virginia.
I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stai Ciolkowski.
Your two co-hosts.
And we are doing a dramatic reading of a play that we are going to perform in the flesh next Monday at Stories in the Round. That's November the 26th at 7 o'clock at 13245 Searfoss Pike, the Universal Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown.
Well done.
One day I will get that in the right order. I should have it tattooed on my glasses or something. So
it's charming stuff. Yes. Just charming.
So I thought we could take a short break from the play to talk about something nice that happened in storytelling just a couple days ago.
Okay, well, before you do that, I want to catch up, because we never told our listeners that the play was written by Ann Nelson,
right,
who is a journalist. And lived much of this story that we're telling via dramatic reading and will perform on Monday. And at the very beginning of the show, we had a little musical piece by Andy Offit Irwin, and we try to make sure to always give him credit,
right,
and gratitude for letting us use his original composition, Tarry Here, when we open the show.
That's true.
What did you want to tell our listeners about that happened in storytelling?
This past Friday evening.
Oh, yeah.
In the town of Sharpsburg, Maryland.
I was there.
Yes. Fanny was there. And so was Larry Hayes and Mark Brew and Renee Emanuel. And yours truly. I always wonder about that. Yours truly. What if it's
as opposed to falsely?
Yes. What if the guy is a liar and says... You know, anyway.
Well, it was storytelling, so you never know.
Right. And we had a telebration, which is a national event that happens as close as possible to most of the groups on the Saturday before Thanksgiving. And it happens nationwide. All over the country, people are doing telebrations. And it is a way of introducing storytelling to the community. And so we had a very nice turnout of local people And we had a very interesting couple showed up and said, we heard about this event when we were at the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee. So since they lived not too far from Sharpsburg, they decided they would come. And sure enough, all the way from Tennessee, the word came to Sharpsburg, and this couple showed up, and they were enjoyed themselves very much. They had met Larry Hayes at Jonesboro, and he told them about this event. So each of us, each of the five tellers, told a story about games, different kinds of games. And the audience was very well pleased. It was a fine evening. And the people who run the Victory Garden Ranch, Beth and Dwayne Harris, were gracious hosts. We didn't have to rent the room that we performed in, and we didn't have to do anything like that. They just graciously opened their building for us, and people could walk around the shop and see it is a place that supports veterans. Profits from their establishment go to support veterans in many ways. And many of the things that they sell in the shop are produced by veterans. So we had a great evening.
It was a wonderful, wonderful time. And we all told stories about games and different types and meanings of that word.
Right.
Very interesting stories. Some liars stories and some personal stories. Traditional stories. It was really a fine mix.
It was.
It was a great audience as well. A lovely audience.
Right. We had some nice pictures, which I was able to put on Facebook. It's the first time I've done that in a long time. I usually ask my wife to do pictures and things. So, but it turned out
that worked out very well. Well, thank you for inviting me. And
of course.
I hope we get to do it again.
I'm sure we will. And I can tell you the date.
Oh, well then.
November
23rd.
2019. November 22nd, 2019. It'll be a Friday evening, November 22nd, 2019. And I have in mind that we'll have some new storytellers.
Ah.
Maybe even some young storytellers, which would be pretty good.
As in children?
As in young people.
Yeah, young people. Yeah. Okay.
Even younger than me. Of course, that covers most of the population. So, I think it's time that we go back to the guys and we are now at the next juncture.
I'm getting my calendar.
I see. Well, my co-host is now getting her calendar.
So I can talk about open mic in Frederick.
Oh, right. There you go. At New Spire Arts.
You got it.
Right.
115 East Church Street in Frederick, the old Board of Ed building downtown. And that's next Sunday, the 25th, well, not this coming Sunday, but it is this coming Sunday.
The 25th.
After Thanksgiving. And Nick Newland will be the lead storyteller, the featured storyteller. He's coming from Southern Maryland to tell stories about reunions. Laura First, another storyteller, local storyteller from Keedysville, Maryland, will be co-hosting, and I will be the other co-host, and we hope you come and tell stories too. But if you're just getting your feet wet and you just want to listen, that's absolutely fine. Although we have been very proud of ourselves for getting everybody to tell stories from the audience the first two sessions that we had.
Yeah, locking the door helped.
We did not lock the door. You're going to scare people, Stosh. No. Well, and then there will be another open mic in December. And the theme for that one is family traditions. And that's on the 16th of December, Sunday afternoon. All of these sessions are 3 to 5, but we hope to continue into 2019, but we haven't scheduled those yet. We're still getting our feet wet. So help us start this brand new series by coming out on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at 115 East Church Street at New Spire Arts, and tell a story, hear a story, and share the camaraderie of storytellers in a circle. It's actually, we've been calling it Open Circle, Storytelling Circle.
Oh, an open circle. That's a curve, isn't it?
An arc.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. So now we're going back to the guys.
Right.
For a few minutes before we close. And tell me where we're starting. Are we starting right where we left off?
Right where we left off.
Okay. You're jumping around a bit today, and I'm trying to keep up.
All right.
No. You're doing almost exactly what you said you were going to do.
Almost. Okay.
Okay. So this is Joan, the journalist, picking up again. We didn't dance. He just gave my hand that little push, like the demonstration of a cantilever. It was all proper. But after that touch, whenever I watched him after that, I noticed how light he was on his feet. I could imagine him moving quickly and usefully across a landscape of flame and broken glass. I could see him at a dance class swinging his partner, smiling as their steps snapped, synchronized into place. I could see Jimmy Hughes cresting a hill on his bike and Patrick O'Neill with his kids and his Waldorf salad at the church picnic. It made me wonder what I used to see every time I walked past a firehouse. I never thought about a kitchen back there. I knew then that every time I saw a person on the street, I saw only his public shadow. The rest, the important part, lies in layer after layer below, beyond our view. We have no idea what wonders lie hidden in the people around us. Nick, where were you that morning?
At home, in Brooklyn. When it happened, I went outside to the street. I could see the towers on fire.
You were off duty.
I wasn't due in until 6 p.m. that night. We worked shifts. Patrick was on that morning.
You went to the firehouse.
I made an entry in the log at 10:15. I got there 20 minutes after the second tower went down. The engine and truck left at 8:52. We've got a video camera at the door with a time clock. You see them go out. We lost 14. 8 from 60 truck, 6 from the engine. 2 survived, both drivers. The last thing Pat said was, "We're going into Tower 1. You see, there was a really stupid thing. You know those big orange plastic cones they use for traffic? Well, the ladder truck ran into one on the way, and it got wedged under the fender. You can't go anywhere till you get the cone out. Steve, the driver, he's out there wrestling and cursing that cone, and it just wouldn't come out. So Pat says, "Come on, guys, we'll go on. It's just a couple of blocks, and Steve can meet us down there. We're going to Tower 1. Steve finally gets the cone out and heads down. He makes it to the lobby of Tower 1, and he's trying to find out where the company is. And then he's blown out the lobby of Tower 1 by the collapse of Tower 2. He's blown clear out of that lobby. Hitting that stupid cone saved his life.
An orange plastic traffic cone.
They still haven't found the guys. I don't know where they are. Maybe after the second plane hit Tower 2, they went there. I just have no idea. I keep trying to figure it out.
We can't figure any of this out. It's too big for us. People used to have religion. Something terrible would happen, and they'd say, "Oh, it was God's will." But we don't buy that now. God's will. This wasn't God's will. There's no reason, no explanation.
Yeah, no reason. I say to Pat the night before, "You want to work first shift or second shift?" We do this all the time, trade off. And always before, he has a reason. I'll take the day, you take tomorrow. I'll take tomorrow, you take the day. He'd say, I got my daughter's soccer practice. I got this, I got that. There was always a reason. But that day he just said, oh, I'll take Tuesday morning. This time he didn't give a reason. There is no reason. I'm alive and he's dead, and I don't even know why. I lie awake nights thinking, what was the reason?
No reason. Nick, this guy sounds too perfect. I mean, he must have had some flaw. Come on.
A flaw? Well, I guess he was a perfectionist.
Okay.
It used to drive him nuts if something wasn't working right. If something was messy, if he saw the Probies loafing around the firehouse, do something useful, sweep or something, or if they were sitting in the kitchen, he'd say, don't just sit there, read something. That was Patrick.
Yeah. Okay. Now, is that a flaw? Well, at least it's human. We got to make him human.
I tell you, every day at the firehouse, I still think he's going to walk through that door.
Okay, tell me what you think of this. Excuse me. I want to offer my condolences to his family who are here with us today. It's impossible to think of Patrick without thinking of you. Even when he was working all out, Patrick always had his family in mind. That's the sense I have of him.
Yeah, that's good.
Patrick was a fine father. It was a quality he brought to the firehouse. He had that calm presence you look for in a leader. Follow me, he'd say, and they would. The men looked up to him for the way he did his job, but also for the way he lived his life. Work, church, and home was his motto.
Well, that's what Barney always said was Patrick's motto. I don't know if that's what Patrick said was his motto. But no, leave it in. It sounds good.
Okay. Patrick O'Neill was a big man. He covered the ground in long, sure strides. When he went out to a fire, he led the way. The other guys had to walk double time just to keep up.
That's right. I was one of them.
We could put that in. He took special pride in the new guys, the Probies. He expected the same sense of purpose in them that he had himself. If one of them was taking it easy around the firehouse and Patrick walked in, he'd need to find an emergency broom. On September 11th, Patrick was 6 weeks away from taking his captain's test, and there's no doubt about it. He would have aced it. When I think of Patrick, I think of the infantry motto, follow me. I'm sure that's what Patrick said that morning when he got the alarm, follow me, with his long stride that gave so much confidence and purpose to his men that day. And I don't care whether Patrick ever took that captain's test. In my book, he earned it, and captains, the least of it. Patrick O'Neill was many things to many people. Leader, friend, brother, husband, father. And none of us here will ever forget him.
If you want to hear the rest of this story, you should come to the Stories in the Round on Monday, November 26th at 7 p.m. at 13245 Searfoss Pike at the
Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown. And if you want to hear past programs of the Storytelling Hour here at Enlighten Radio, you can go to talltales.enlightenradio.org and hear almost 3 years, I think it is 3 years, of storytelling on air. And of course, you can go back and listen to this show as well, and it should be up in a few days, posted in a few days.
This is Stacy Okowski and
Fanny Crawford,
your co-hosts for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia, closing out this week's show. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for
Jazz.
Jazz.